stretched out over the sheen of water.
I reckon we could risk the lights. Might be a bit of leakage around the shutters.
How about the windows and the roof? Shine right out through them.
Huh. If you had an angle, I think it's a chance worth the taking.
Where's the control switch?
One by the door as we came in.
There's about 5 different switches, Ryan.
We don't want too much light. Just try one of them. See what happens. Turn it off quick if it's not the right one.
He heard the click of the switch, but nothing seemed to happen. Then Ryan looked behind him and saw a pale halo of gold around the edge of the door frame.
Off. Let's turn on a lamp outside the main entrance.
At a second click, the light vanished. The next one put on a string of bulbs that ringed the walls a little above head height. They were obviously only intended to provide background illumination, but they were sufficient for what Ryan and Christy needed. Also, there was less chance of their being spotted from the main section of the Institute. Ryan leaned on the cold metal rail that ran around the building, protection from an accidental fall into the water, and stared down. It was a bizarre sight, unlike anything else that they'd been allowed to see anywhere else in the complex. All the other laboratories that Tomlin had permitted them to visit had been places of light and space, and the dolphins that they'd seen had all been free-swimming and had given every appearance of being perfectly contented. Here, there were a dozen or more pens, none of them looking bigger than 10 feet square. Each held a single dolphin, and every one of the dolphins had its head craned awkwardly upward, straining to look at the two humans.
What the fuck is going on here, Christy?
Those pens have iron bars, and there's wires running to some of them. Like they've been giving electric shocks to them. What's this double sicko lever?
The stillness was unnerving. Ryan walked along the side of the internal key, looking at the shelves of equipment that lined the walls. There were rows of strange harnesses made of rubber, leather, and steel chains. On the edge of what had once been Cannon City, Colorado, Ryan had once visited a hijacked Gaudi that specialized in what they called Sadie Maisie sex. The sluts carried whips and wore high-heeled boots, and the Johns got their kicks from being tied up, beaten, and humiliated. Most of the bedrooms carried their specialized equipment. Ryan thought that the stuff on the shelves looked remarkably like that bondage gear.
What's that down there, Ryan?
Where?
The end. There's some blasters and spear guns, something like that. Can't make out the details.
I'll take a look.
The long shed seemed increasingly like the abode of some demonic torturer. The row of low-wattage bulbs didn't give quite enough light to examine the shelves and closets in detail, but Ryan could still see enough. More than enough. There were spears, some of them with ferociously barbed points, most handmade, but a few with the patent of age. And harpoons. Ryan recalled the appalling time he'd spent on board a whaling ship, and the way the harpoons had torn the life from the hearts of the great cetaceans. Some of these 10-foot spears had cavities in their hollow heads, designed to carry explosive charges to quicken the destruction. The strange, clumsy harnesses suddenly began to make a horrific sense to Ryan. At the far end, against the blank seaward wall, were a number of hand-built grens and mines, shaped to fit snugly into the leather and chain rigs.
Bastard.
What's there?
That ship I found, blown apart, and the body shot.
Christy moved along the catwalk, dolphin heads and eyes following her.
You think it was done from here?
I'm sure of it. The dolphins are trained. Fire blast. There's some kind of electric cattle prod here. Trained to carry the mines like missiles. No wonder Tomlin kept this place locked tight.
The door was flung open, and every one of the lights flared into dazzling life. There stood Mark Tomlin and 5 of his men, all holding rifles.
Oh dear, did you get lost?
Christy had her Smith & Wesson Model 640 in its holster, the double-action 5-shot 38 caliber blaster with a stubby 2-inch barrel. Her hand hovered over the butt, her eyes turned toward Ryan, waiting for the tiniest clue from him that would lead her to draw and start shooting. Ryan rested his fingers lightly on his 9mm 6-hour, weighing up the situation, considering the odds. A phrase of the traitor drumming in his mind.
First 5 seconds, give you your best chance. After that, the odds go downhill faster than a brake-failed war wag.
The six men were holding their blasters at the hip, pointing vaguely toward himself and Christie. Not even the most skillful shootist was going to be very accurate firing a rifle from the hip. The range was only about 20 yards, but Ryan still figured that the dice lay for himself and Christie if they decided to draw their handguns and start shooting. The other factor that he took into consideration was the way that Tomlin had been treating them since they'd first arrived at the Institute, with soft hands rather than with a metalled fist. And it would have been easy to have stormed into the shed and started blasting at them, if that was what he intended. The scales tipped slightly in the one direction.
Think we better do some talking, Tomlin.
Ryan's hand never moved from the blaster.
Perhaps.
Take him out, Professor!
This was said by a tall, skinny man on the right of the group. Ryan knew him slightly. His name was Jerry Knight, and he seemed to work mainly in the technical side of the operation, maintaining the power source.
I don't think so, Jerry.
They've seen too much!
Perhaps. But...
Ryan sensed what was coming, reading it in the man's tense posture, the knuckle whitening inside the trigger guard of the old M16. Ryan spoke to Christie, his lips barely moving, his voice pitched so low that nobody else would have heard it above the background noise of the small waves.
Draw when I do, but don't fire. I think we can avoid a bloodbath here.
Fuck it!
No, Jerry!
The bullet was low to the left, missing Ryan by a good yard, punching a hole in the wall, and howling off into the surrounding blackness.
Nobody else do anything, Triple Stoop.
Knight was out of the reckoning, even though he was still on his feet. He tottered to the right, his hands waving to the private beat of a silent drummer, blood fountaining from the exit wound in his back. His feet gave the illusion of moving more slowly than the rest of his body, as though he were wading through a deepening pool of molasses. His mouth sagged open, already brimming with a scarlet froth, and his eyes were staring sightlessly at the roof. Before anyone could react, the dying man took half a dozen quick dancing steps farther to his right and folded neatly over the iron rail into one of the pens below.
Get him out!
Ryan moved sideways and peered over the rail. It was a hideous sight. Knight had fallen between two of the cages, his head and shoulders drooping into one, his legs and lower torso landing in the other. One of the dolphins had seized the skull of the dying man between its jaws and was frantically tugging it back and forth, trying to separate it from the upper body. Blood spurted from the severed carotid artery. In the other cage was a bottlenose, but it looked like it had suffered some kind of accident. The end part of its upper and lower jaws was missing, giving it a macabre, porcine appearance. It had bitten down on Jerry's left foot, tearing it away at the ankle joint. Rising up on its powerful tail, it rotated at great speed, flourishing the severed foot, still in its neat black shoe. The dolphins in the other constricting pens were going mad, adding to the bedlam by thrashing their tails against the surface of the water. Despite his ghastly terminal wounds, Knight was still alive. His screams were barely audible above the cacophony of sounds, but his arms were still flailing from side to side, his fingers grasping convulsively at the bars of the cages.
I'll save him, Professor!
The desperate shout from one of the rifle-toting men didn't seem to even reach Tomlin. He didn't even look up at the disturbance. Ryan leveled the Sig Sauer and squeezed the trigger once more, aiming carefully for Knight's exposed nape, avoiding the dolphin. The body immediately went limp, though the death did nothing to calm the feeding frenzy of the creatures in their cramped, foaming pens.
Professor, they're eating poor Jerry, tearing him limb from limb!
At last, Tomlin seemed to recover his senses.
Use the shocker!
On all of them?
Yes!
Ryan watched, still holding the Sig Sauer, though all thought of anyone doing any shooting seemed to be long gone. The man ran to a big control board, bristling with levers, gauges, dials, and colored buttons. He reached for a large red lever, glancing once over his shoulder as though he wanted confirmation from Tomlin. But the professor was standing on the brink of the quay, leaning on the rail, staring at the devouring of his erstwhile colleague. Sensing the delay, he looked behind him.
Do it, man!
The lever was rammed down, and there was a tremendous surge of electricity. The lights in the laboratory building flickered and dimmed, as if they were about to plunge everyone into total blackness. Ryan saw a ghostly blue light dancing along the iron bars of the cages, hissing below the water. The galvanic shock was powerful enough to stun every one of the dolphins, sending them into a stiffened stillness, floating belly up in each tank.
You've murdered them, you red-eyed bastard!
No! They'll recover quickly, Christie! No permanent harm is done to them, believe me. You murdered Jerry Knight. Shot him down in cold blood, Ryan.
You got a fucking poor memory for a white coat scientist, Tomlin.
What?
Ryan gestured to the hole in the wall of the building behind him.
You think that was made by someone spitting?